episode 71 of Drunk on Comics. And I was just going over the internet, and I found this awesome idea we need to do. It's new. It's called the Harlem Shake. We should really get on this fad before it fades away.
Actually, you know what? Fuck that. You actually wanted to do a Harlem Shake video at one point.
Last week.
Yeah, when I just found out about this. It's new, guys.
Actually, that brings me back to Kevin doing the Harlem Shake outside the cab.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. I remember that night.
It's funny is that I talk to people about our website, and then they'll come back a handful of weeks later and go, yeah, dude, I listened to some of your podcasts, and then they always go back to that when I'm just piss drunk. I don't remember what episode that was.
It was special edition.
We just called it a special edition. We didn't actually number it. But yeah, during that episode, yeah, apparently I was so piss drunk that in my own head I had the Harlem Shake going as we were exiting out of a cab. Right.
I remember it was around the time the Third Army came out.
And he kept going to the Third Reich. Yeah. Well, anyway, welcome to Drunk on Comics.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for having me here.
You're always here. I don't understand why Kevin always says thanks for having me.
Special guest Kevin.
You know what? It's privilege and an honor, sir. I salute you. Thank you.
Yeah. My name's Derek. That was Kevin.
Hello. Oh, wait, I was going to say hello. My name's Tony, but I guess I was saying hello for Kevin.
He's saving us time. Thank you, Derek.
You're welcome. This is our weekly podcast where we talk about comic books, we talk conventions, we talk collecting, we talk industry news, and all kinds of other fun and freaky facts. So, I don't know.
Freaky? What's freaking you out these days, man?
Well, what's freaking me out, actually, we're going to talk about an off-the-shelf. So I'll just jump right into that, where off-the-shelf we talk about comics that came out this week. So, spoiler warning, we're probably going to spoil
them.
so just be aware we will talk about stuff that happened in comics. So if you hear us talking about one you haven't read, you can always pause it and come back and check us out. Or you can just suffer through, whichever you prefer. One last thing. Off the Shelf is brought to you by inter-comics.com, online retailer located out of the UK, but they do ship worldwide. So go check them out. They have awesome prices no matter where you're located. Who wants to start?
Derek, man, you should step up to the plate and take a swing at it.
I'll take a swing. I like baseball.
Do it.
all right, so this week I picked up Afterlife with Archie, which was written by Roberto Aguirre Sacasa. Art was by Francesco Francavilla, and it's published by Archie Comics. And I picked up the Andrew Peepoy variant.
Hell yeah, you should have.
Yeah, well, and I part of the reason I picked that one up, though, is that that got to see that at Grand Con a couple weeks ago. But
surprise, surprise, I picked up that cover, too.
Which, it is kind of weird that we all picked up the same cover, because there were a couple variants out there. But
we're like three peas in a pod.
Yeah, yeah. Now...
Three peas in a podcast.
Nah.
All right.
Getting back to it.
Okay. I didn't pay any attention to who was doing the art in this book when I picked it up, because I picked up the Andrew Peepoy cover, which is drawn in the standard Archie style. I picked this book up because I wanted to see what kind of mashup they were going to do with zombies and Archie. And needless to say, I open it up and I see Frank Avila doing the art in there. I was thrilled. I was also shocked. I should preface this for any of our listeners. Afterlife with Archie, even though it's an Archie book, is not a kid's book. It's definitely an actual, I would say, a very adult, not in the grotesque or inappropriate or anything like that.
It's Walking Dead with Archie characters.
Yeah, and that's really what it is. So don't buy this one for your kids if you think you're picking them up an Archie book. But anyway, seeing these characters drawn...
I'm just doing it. See, it's like a bag of chips, man. See, I'm trying to open... Listeners, I'm trying to open up... my comics.
Your self-sealing bag.
Yeah, my self-sealing bag, and it's like a bag of chips. You know that guy in the movie theater, he's trying to open it very slowly.
just do it already.
And yeah, you're just making more noise.
Just pull the Band-Aid off.
I know,
just rip it off.
Okay. Anyway, Derek, sorry to screw your mojo.
But I got to say, though, seeing these characters in a much more realistic approach was something I was not expecting, and I really wasn't prepared for it. But if anybody can take a cartoon-based series, you know, like this and turn it on its head, it's Frank Avila. His panels were amazing. Camera angles were super creative. And the colors and the inks that he did on this thing that really gave it that true horror movie feel and set the tone, I thought.
My favorite was Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
That was awesome. And that's where, you know, Aguirre Sacasa, I think he did a really good job of keeping these characters true to their core, but making them, you know, he added a level of realism that sometimes you kind of lose in a standard Archie book, I think. And Sabrina, though, with having that little bit of necromancy in there.
I was confused at first who this random witch was until I saw the talking cat, and I was like, oh, I remember watching this show.
You didn't realize Sabrina was from Archie?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I knew. The moment I saw it in the panels, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. She's part of this universe.
Yeah. I kind of forgot as well until, but I was the same. As soon as it's like Sabrina, I'm like, oh, crap. We're talking like, you know. And here's where the only thing I'm going to spoil is on how this thing all starts, because Jughead's dog, Hot Dog.
Hot Dog.
Yeah. Gets hit by a car, and he's trying to, you know, save him, but Hot Dog's dead. But he takes him to Sabrina and her aunts to see if they can use their magic to bring him back, but it's too late. The aunts, later on, man, they become fucking terrifying. And, you know, it's not the cute Caroline Ray or whatever her name is that, you know.
They're bitching witches.
Oh, yeah. They'll give you nightmares, but, yeah, I don't want to say too much about this book because it's just fucking perfect.
It's weird. This is the second week where I've picked up an Archie book. This is the second Archie book I've ever picked up in my life.
Yeah.
I got that Cloud of Thunder one, which was funny. And you told me we randomly ran into each other at a comic book shop because
that's
what happened, and took a long lunch break, and you said, you got to pick this up. And I was like, okay. Glad I did.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
This is, I think, God, it's so good.
Well, I'll say even for me, who has not ever read Archie, I mean, I know a little bit, a new reader can get into this and be like, this is pretty good. You kind of know who the characters are, but you're just reading this as kind of a horror story, and it's great.
Yeah, and I think one of the crazy things to see is that as these characters that so many people, you know and love are turned into zombies, I think that's going to really mess with some people. So I'm recommending everybody go out. Kevin, I know that you asked me, you're like, hey, are you if anybody's talking about this book this week? And I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I was very excited about hearing about this book several months ago when it was announced, and like, I can't wait for it, and I'm absolutely thrilled. Yeah. Thrilled with it. How did you guys grow up with Archie?
I didn't.
You didn't? So how do you? So is Archie like all aspects of Archie and the whole world brand new to you?
Okay, I knew who Archie was. I knew that he had the two chicks that always wanted to be with him. I knew who Jughead was. That's about my extent. And I knew they live Riverdale.
Riverdale. Go to Riverdale High.
That's about it.
See,
do you know about Moose?
Yeah.
I do now.
Moose is the big, you know, the big jock buddy that, you know, always stands up for Archie because he's a ginger.
He's got knuckles.
Yeah.
Moose's knuckles.
God, he should be a superhero on Justice League Canada or something. Moose is kind of, you know, Archie's big buddy because, I mean, Archie is a scrawny ginger kid who somehow has two hot chicks after him. But, you know, always...
It is the world of make-believe.
Very much so. But, yeah, so, I mean, you've got Moose, you've got Jughead, you've got Reggie, who, you know, Reggie's kind of your standard preppy frat boy kind of guy. And how Reggie doesn't get the two chicks after him, I've never understood that. But to answer your question...
Well, because he's a fucking whiny bitch, according to this book.
Yeah, but...
I understand there's a particular instances why he is in this particular book, but a joke. But,
yeah. But to answer your question, occasional comic here or there, you know, that...
Okay.
And it was mostly, like, my friends would have them or somebody would give me one. Like, I never actually sought out Archie. It just wasn't my thing.
Sure, sure. Myself, there was an animated Archie show for a period of time.
The Archie's Weird Mysteries?
I don't remember.
Scooby-Doo?
I don't remember what it was called.
Because I've been watching Archie's Weird Mysteries on Kubo.
No, it definitely wasn't. They were nothing.
Tony, what?
Kubo.
You love that Kubo.
Kubo, isn't that that syndicated off-brand network?
Yeah. Yeah, and it has He-Man and She-Ra.
And 1,000 commercials.
Yeah.
Jane and her dragon.
Yeah, and it has, and most of the commercials are for the channel that you're watching. Make sure you watch us. I am, you asshole. Put the show back on. Anyway, we got sidetracked. But,
yeah.
Okay, to come back, Archie and the Afterlife, perfect, 2 mugs up. Go buy the book. I can't wait for the next issue. So
we'll wait. We'll wait here. We'll sit here and wait for
it. I can't wait. So you guys go ahead and talk.
He's going to get it right now. He's going straight to the publisher.
Yeah.
I know you have that already.
All right, Kevin, what did you read this week?
Oh, my turn.
Yeah.
Oh. sorry, man. I was not prepared. But, and you know, so this week I'm going to give another title. God, how many times have I mentioned this character? It's just so ridiculous how many times I've mentioned this particular character, and how many times have I done a number one? I mean,
which character?
Yeah, I was gonna say you've mentioned this character.
Oh my gosh, dude!
Seriously, I would love this whole review and not mention the character at all. I'll be like, what the
hell? Oh, this guy! Oh my gosh! No, okay,
he's super.
Dude, I was trying to think of something funny because of all the number ones and all the Superman, that's the character I'm going to be talking about. How many times I've mentioned both of those? You know, I want to say, like, Drunken Comics is turning into, like, the progressive insurance of podcasts.
I don't follow.
I don't know. It just seems like it's all the same thing, but with different spins on it. Because I keep on bringing up number ones and Supermans.
Okay.
I thought it was funny in my head.
I don't follow the progressive, but anyway.
Yeah. You know that they got like a million commercials? Anyway. Okay, so Superman, Wonder Woman number one, written by Charles Soule, pencils by Tony S. Daniel, ink by Bat.
Bat?
Is it Bat?
Bat, B-A-T-T. Bat.
Yeah. Bat. Okay. He's a man. So special shout out to the, to the great Reach Around cover. By Bat Daniel and Mori, but
the reach around cover.
Reach around.
Yeah, it's a nice reach around cover.
It's not a wrap around cover. It's a reach around.
It's a reach around cover. Yeah,
yeah, because it's got that one extra fold.
Oh, okay, I got you. Yeah, oh, I see what's funny now.
Because you called it a reach around.
Whatever. So no, but take a look at this. Quit laughing at my stupidity. And take a look at here.
Oh, that's one of the most beautiful reach arounds I've ever seen.
Hey, it's everything you can ask for a cover. Excellently drawn, good representations of friends and foes. Since we're talking about drawings, inside, again, all you could ever ask for in a Superman comic. Good lines, colors from both the scenes that are not, there are kind of dramatic story building. To the action panels, a big tip of the cap to the art. Now, one of the fascinating things about the New 52 for me, and there's plenty of them, but one of them, I'd say my top 52 things that I like, is the Superman-Wonder Woman relationship. There's a relationship if you guys didn't know.
Kevin, can I interrupt? Because you're kind of our resident DC guy.
Sure.
Were Clark and Diana in a relationship pre-New 52 ever?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. I wasn't either, but I'm like, you know, maybe I missed something because I'm kind of like, well.
Yeah, this is something that I always thought would be interesting, but starting with New 52, when I started picking up comics, when I started doing this with you guys, that was one of the first in the first handful of weeks that that's something that came up, and it was just fascinating to me because you got two total badasses, and fucking, and then you add in the relationship, and then just I don't know, it just everything just turns up to an 11 for me, and it just I think it makes sense.
Is there a relationship going on in other titles or just this?
Well, it started in one of the other ones. I remember.
Yeah, I remember there's the kiss, but I haven't seen anything else. The date.
So yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I mean, this relationship has been progressing here and there. The most interesting about the whole relationship right now is that it's a secret they're trying to keep. They've been doing a little bit of the mess around right now, and they've been doing a really good job of keeping it under wraps. I think
to wrap it up.
I think that
is that a condom joke.
I think that Clark says it excellently in the pages here, saying the two of them are together, and he says to Diana, "We give them everything," referring to the world. "We give them everything. This is ours. At least for now."
So basically, they just don't want to deal with the paparazzi.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some other bullshit going on that might be from it. I mean, there's not too many panels. In this issue, there aren't too many panels about them trying to keep it on the down low. But a continuing developing story is the fact that there's a secret, and I think that there's someone who wants to bring it to the surface. And that secrecy is another, I think, of another reason why I'm kind of really digging their relationship. Now, the only one that does that I know that knows right now is Batman.
Well, it's because he's a really good detective.
No, he's a big fucking perv. I mean, look at all the fucking toys he has. All the wonderful toys. No,
why isn't Wonder Woman with him?
Because she's getting a reach around from Superman.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. Forever Evil 2. Did you guys read that?
Yeah.
Fucking Owlman and
Superwoman.
Superwoman.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
So
it's like opposite world.
What?
Because the Superwoman, Batman on that side, and Superman.
Yeah,
and
yeah, no.
Cheers.
Well,
I'll show myself out.
Cheers, Tony.
The guys who make up this book, they do what I want in a book, and they do it excellently. They give us little tastes of what these two are thinking, and explore how the relationship may work out together. So, man, I love it from that. Okay, bad guys. Oh, yeah. And there's a bad guy in here. And it's one of the biggest badasses ever. I'm not gonna spoil it for
Is
you.
Is it Doomsday?
I'm going to keep my consecutive streak of spoiler-free shit going by not Mix saying who it is. Because I was shocked. Shocked.
Can I see the comic?
I'll cool you down. No, I was shocked. I have not been like shocked by a villain making an appearance in a comic at all. I'm leaving it out, and I hope someone will have the same moment that I had. And when he does make an appearance, it actually gets a little bloody at the end, which I'm not. You know, guys, I know all about violence, I think it's for a bloody little bit of dismemberment action going on. I think it's as tastefully done as it can be, and I'll give it a tip of the cap there too. So, man. So anyway, for those listeners, you're just joining us. Superman, Wonder Woman, number one, awesome. You fucking pick it up now. If you want a different perspective on Superman, Wonder Woman, number one, even though ultimately they think it's awesome as two, then you should go to this site. Now, I'm going to wait a second for all of the listeners to go get a pencil or open up a web browser.
I hope you're saying drunkoncomics.com.
Listen it up, okay? Okay. WWW.
Yeah.
Okay. Though I don't even know why I...
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't need the WWW anymore. You know,
yeah, I started to do the little tri-dub for a little bit, but no one caught on to that.
Is that back during Y2K?
Yeah. WWW. I'm looking at you, old people. DrunkOnComics.com. So if you're listening to this podcast review recently, you'll find it on the homepage. But if you're a little late to the game, you'll find it in the review section of the website.
Last call.
Yeah.
Last call section.
Yeah, DrunkOnComics.com.
Yep.
Check that out.
And I got to be honest, I did not even pause to look at this book on the shelf. But A,
because
if I would have known.
Superman?
I'm just not a DC guy.
Well, I...
You know, but... Charles Soule's writing it, and I've been really impressed by everything I've seen from him. And looking inside here, the art by Tony Daniel is gorgeous. So
yeah.
I think I'm going to go back and pick it up.
You know, I really like it. I'm going to continue picking this up. But my only complaint is not really about this issue. It's about the okay, what's next? Superman, Green Lantern? Is that going to be a new monthly series?
I don't see them dating.
Come on, Hal Jordan.
Yeah,
I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, cool.
Yeah,
Tony, what do you got for your reach around cover?
I don't have anything like that, but since I am the third person to talk right now, I will take the third book. Damn it, it's called Three. Fuck, I was thinking it was called Third.
It's the trifecta.
No, I got a. Damn it, I was just about ready to call. I got Third. I got Three by Kieran Gillen, Jordy Belair, and Ryan Kelly. This book, I loved it. It is a whole different perspective, but not really, on 300, which I thought was an amazing book. The movie adaption was pretty good. And just that whole Greek-Roman history I've always loved, growing up reading mythology and stuff, and this book seems to kind of ground that a lot more in less of the how Sparta was amazing and everything, and more that they were smart and great, but they had a huge army of slaves behind them to get their shit done. Gillen went into great work in looking up the history, the facts. They even have their historical consultant, Professor Stephen Hodgkinson, in the credits here too, because they've been trying to make this book be accurate. And it takes place, I believe, 100 years after Thermopylae. So anyone that's seen the movie or read the book knows the 300, you know, big stand was there. This kind of has taken the mindset of these people called the Helots. They were actually part of this huge force. There wasn't just 300 people that were there. There's 300 plus at least another 300 who were with them at that battle, give or take even 10 more per soldier of Spartans. You look at that, and it makes the mystique of that battle a little less than what you would think. And I just love that this is kind of showing more of a history that I didn't even know about. That, yeah, the 300 had those huge shields. Yeah, they didn't carry those things everywhere. They had these people to carry them with them. So these were the shield bearers. These were the people that are less than even slaves, to tell you the truth, in this book. And it seems like the way that they're going with this story is to kind of have another rebellion on their hands, and of when Sparta finally, I don't know, fell from grace, fell from the top. And I just thought the art was great. I thought the pacing was good. I thought the story was good. I know that you had a problem with the names, Derek.
No, it wasn't the names. It was the characters. Ryan Kelly's art is gorgeous, and that's reason enough to pick this up. You put Jordy Belair's colors on top of it, and that's actually why I bought the book. It's a good story. I didn't become invested in the characters. Like I don't really know who's who here.
Well, I don't even think that who's who here is really going to matter in the long run, because spoiler alert, a lot of people die at the end of the book that that talk in this. I think the greatest thing, though, is to look at this over the span of what this book is going to try to tell the story of, especially the last couple pages where it pretty much kind of talks about where he got this idea. And my favorite part of this was the book came to him one night when he returned from his traditional monthly comics drinks and crashed and just picked up 300 and thought, well, how did all those just 300 warriors, you know, do that? And then found out there's more people even more behind that. So I love that Gillen drinks and has monthly comic drinks with people. He's like one of our best friends.
Yeah. I guess, like, and this is the only reason why I don't know if I'm going to pick up number two or not, is for me, I need to be emotionally invested with a character. You know, like, I need to feel like I can maybe relate to them or whatever. And I think it's kind of neat because I think the whole thing of three is going to be, you know, the storyteller guy in here, the woman, and the crippled ex-soldier. You know, I think those are the three that they're referring to. But, yeah, if nothing else, though, pick it up just for the artwork.
Yeah, for sure that. But I think that once a couple more books get out and the story starts showing its pacing, what it's going to be, I will say that this would probably be a perfect compendium. Was it?
Compendium?
Compendium, yeah. Me not speak well.
Trade book? Trade paperback?
For anyone that enjoyed 300 and everything like that.
What I'm thinking, like, and I think what I will probably do is I will probably end up picking this up in trade format. Just because I think I might enjoy it more when I can see the whole thing laid out than just reading it on a monthly basis. I prefer things monthly normally, but Walking Dead, you and I both started the same way with trades. I kind of wish I had stayed on the trades.
Mm-hmm. Because then you get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck reading that. That's one story, definitely. I don't want to read month to month. Yeah. Sorry, writers. I mean, I need more of the story all at once there. It's too good, really, for me monthly.
Some books work better in a trade format.
Yeah.
Some people are going to crucify me for this, but I think Walking Dead is one of them, because even though the issue 115 that just came out right now, I just saw something that said that it's the best-selling book of 2013, best-selling single issue.
Wow.
Yeah. Even knowing that, this issue was a letdown. Like, it was, all right, more setup. Like, can we get to something? Yeah. You know, but I think if it was in a trade, I wouldn't have even noticed, because you're just continuing to go on. But anyway, yeah, to continue though, three, Tony, overall?
I give it 3 out of 3 stars.
Cool. It's like half a six pack.
Yeah.
But three good beers.
340 ounces.
They're talls, man. Yeah. All right. Should we hit up some news and notes?
Yeah, because I think there's a lot of news.
Well, there's some. I don't know if we'd say a lot, but there's some convention going on this weekend.
Oh, that's news to me.
Yeah.
Grand Rapids Comic-Con?
That one's going on this weekend, too. New York Comic-Con is happening right now as we are recording. And for those of you that listen to our podcast when it comes out Sunday evenings, it will probably be wrapped up by that point, or the very tail end, depending on when this gets out there and when you're listening. The most interesting news to me out of the whole damn thing was actually not about the comic book industry, but about the convention itself. And that is that when people signed up, they had the option to, like, sync their Twitter and Facebook account with their badges. And New York Comic Con, apparently in the fine print, had it in there that they could tweet and post on those people's behalf. So there were tweets going out saying things like, New York Comic Con is the best 4 days of my year or my life or whatever the hell it was. And people are like, hey, wait, what? I didn't post that. And apparently they stopped it, but it's kind of a brutal marketing tactic, and it's a way to piss people off.
Well, would you guys sign up for this? Okay, let's say they didn't do any of this bullshit. I mean, would you guys link up your Twitter account so you can get live twits from the convention? Like, what new information would they throw out to you that make you go, oh, I need to know that right away?
I guess maybe if they said, you know, this is all of a sudden happening down this hall, and it changed from what the format was, that would be good to
right, get but that. If you're on Twitter, you'd probably be following them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I say, what other value-added shit's going to happen with that?
If they hand me a swag bag full of exclusives, I'd probably go, sure, I'll yeah, sync it up.
Here's my credit card number.
Oh, here's my firstborn. And thank you.
And probably not read all the fine print, because, I mean, how many times do we just click on things, yeah, I read it.
the Apple use agreement.
Yeah, every use agreement ever, you know, I mean, it's just like... Yeah, so it's but yeah, there were a bunch of different things that they put out, and I guess some people got a little bit more pissed off than others. Some people didn't even realize it was going on, you know. But for me, I would have been pissed.
Oh yeah, who wouldn't be?
Yeah,
thank you, that one nerd who called them out on that.
Oh, it was all over. There were some great.
Oh, was mini nerds who did that?
Oh, there were like industry professionals talking about it on Twitter, saying that from now on they're just going to like start like. Tweeting pictures of their buttholes and saying, that wasn't me, that was New York Comic Con that did that.
That's awesome. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, but people are just going, yeah, from now on, every tweet that I put out that like ends up getting backlash because I said something, oh, sorry, guys, that was New York Comic Con.
That's a they just handed everyone like a free slate of like yeah. being dicks on Twitter.
Yep, free pass. All you gotta do is like just say like I hate this group of people #NYCC. Wasn't me? Yeah, but
okay. So there is some news coming out of there. Obviously, a lot of the panels are going on right now. I know that Marvel has sending out a lot of information like. This, a lot of the news that's coming out seems on par or even more than what we got from San Diego.
Which it should be. This is actually a comic book convention. So, is that me being snarky again?
Yeah.
I'm just looking up some news. I was seeing a lot of non-comic book related stuff, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely wasn't as in your face as...
The How I Met Your Mother panel?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Exactly. But
Pop Culture Con. That's what these are now.
It's a comic book and pop culture convention.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'm keeping my mouth shut. Continue, Tony.
Derek, your lip is a little bleedy from all the biting you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Some of the stuff that's coming out from Marvel coming soon. Silver Surfer is getting his own book again. Sweet. Can't wait for that. A lot of things coming from Cataclysm. From what, I think Bendis was saying, or someone of the big people there, was how almost saying Ultimate Comics are dying. It's not about Galactus and how to stop him. It's about the Ultimate Universe realizing their world is about to end. So I'm like, if that's not telling that they're going to end that universe, I don't know what else is except for Galactus destroying it. But
they can just go back in time and fix it.
Do that and you'll have Angela on your ass.
Yeah, sweet.
Has she made an appearance since?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in Guardians now.
Oh, yeah?
Doing stuff. She said a word, I think, last time.
Other chick stuff?
Yeah, she's doing a lot of statuesque poses.
Okay.
Inhumans are, which we've talked about before, getting their book. I mean... It's just all these titles that they're talking about, Peroni. There's going to be a new Ghost Rider title coming out.
Oh, I missed that.
Yep, because it's one of the teasers that they've did. The Overdrive. Well, I guess I can tell you. There's a Defend One teaser that was promoting the Iron Patriot. Don't know what that's necessarily going to be about, but it's probably going to be involving War Machine. Overdrive, which was Ghost Rider, which will be coming out next March. Rad. which was the Silver Surfer one, which I guess I didn't see that one coming, but I guess I could have.
Isn't that NORAD?
NORAD.
And then some stuff coming down with Young Avengers, some mix-ups with the Secret Avengers. There's just a lot of stuff that's coming on through Marvel right now that I'm just getting giddy about. I know that you've seen some X-Men stuff, Derek, that you're excited about.
Yeah, and there's a lot of X-Men news that came out, so I'm just going to kind of pop on a couple of them. The cast of Uncanny X-Men is apparently not going to change. The Wolverine and the X-Men, the next story arc is going to be spinning out of Battle of the Atom, the cross-title arc that's going on now, the event that's going on within all the X-Men titles. The really cool thing about that, for me personally, is that all-new X-Men is going to be adding some new characters. One of them is X-23, which is my personal, you know, favorite. One of the things I thought was really funny is that Dennis Hopeless, the writer of Avengers Arena, of which X-23 is on, and you aren't supposed to know who's going to live or die at the end of it, which there's only three issues left, called out, I think it's editor Nick Lowe, going, yeah, Nick doesn't mind spoiling the Avengers Arena with that one. So I thought that was kind of cool. But that was some of the big highlights for me. The other highlight is going to be fun for both Tony, you and I, that Cable and the X-Force, which you read, and Uncanny X-Force, which I read, are going to have a four-issue crossover.
I know, and that's something that I know we've talked about before. We just knew it had to happen. Yeah. I mean,
you have two teams called X-Force. At some point, it should happen. And it's the event is going to be called Vendetta, and apparently it's going to be two issues from each of the series in there, so four total, and the villain has been revealed to be Strife, which Tony's probably all giddy about.
Yep.
Do they reveal if they're going to wear masks?
I don't know.
I just hope that Cable kicks Bishop's ass.
Are you talking the Strife mask?
No. V for Vendetta. See, man, I got the three strikes and I'm out of here, by the way. So I'm at, so it'll be a couple balls and a couple strikes.
Full count right now, Kev.
All right, enough about this Marvel bullshit. Okay?
What'd you find out about?
What about the future of DC, man? Let's go into the future and think what's going to happen.
Like 5 years from now.
That sounds like a good round number.
Which is cool because
versus I know we were talking pre-production about that 4.5 years and
well and but unfortunately Kevin, that would be third strike. Five is an odd number, not a round one. So yeah,
take your base.
I'm going to score another goal unit.
There's industry gossip going around, and I think it's coming more to fruition now that the convention's going on, that they're going to take for just a month, probably next year in September, they're going to take all the issues and advance them 5 years and give a kind of a story of what's going to happen 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many good things you can do with that, but there's also a lot of bad things about it. Because then they're like, okay, well, aren't you kind of, in a way, spoiling what's going to happen in the future?
Well, it's going to be a lot of 35.1, 0.2, 0.3, and 0.4 issues, but...
With 4D covers?
No, because they already did the 3D. Next year, scratch and sniff.
Awesome. Can't wait. Yeah. Can't wait.
Yeah, Poison Ivy is going to smell like clover, and
you're gonna have to put on calamine lotion after scratching it off because you will have poison ivy.
That's part of the scratch. I don't know. I think it's kind of a, you know, DC, for as gimmicky as this shit is, it works.
Well, fuck yeah, it totally works. I mean, the proof's in the numbers from
what they sold last month.
Yeah. Thank you for who dug this up, man.
Tony and I both dug different ones up.
Okay, nothing gets me more hard than looking at fucking Sabermetrics. Oh, like stats. It was so awesome looking at since I don't know do that too many. I know DC Marvel sales real well, but I don't know what capacity. So it was interesting to see all sorts of statistics involving the DC Villains Month.
How they had a 10-point jump.
Yeah,
in share.
It's unbelievable, and just the two things I took away from this: everyone loves Batman. Mm-hmm. That's definitely that, and no one really cares for Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
because that was your high, Batman. Wonder Woman was your lowest seller.
Was it Cheetah?
Cheetah. Yep.
Yeah, that was a good issue. It was one of the few issue, I picked up.
You don't want, honestly, I want to say, I'm just gonna go on a limb and say, as much as I like Wonder Woman, I subscribe to that on a monthly basis. Honestly, if I were to take, like, I got this issue of Superman Wonder Woman in my hand, if I were to pull up any of the last 20 issues of Wonder Woman and I pull that up and I put it in front of your face, you're gonna go eh to the cover art. And I think cover art may the curb appeal of the cover art is kind of holding Wonder Woman back from actually it being a better title.
People should stop judging it by its cover.
Yeah, Tony.
Yeah, but that's what happens.
I reference episode 2.
But, of course, I mean, ultimately, there might not be an appeal of Wonder Woman as a standalone comic. That's probably a part of it, but to see it as the weakest of the Villains Month, it was kind of sad because Cheetah, like you said, Cheetah was a good episode.
I was gonna say the Dial E one was.
I'm just surprised that Ocean Master beat Cheetah.
Dude, you didn't even read that one.
I'm not saying based on story, but if we're talking based on title and cover alone,
dude, everyone loves Aquaman. Shut your mouth.
What's great to know though is that people love Aquaman more than they love Wonder Woman. So apparently we got a new butt of the joke.
No, but there are so many stats to take into account: 3D, 2D covers regarding the DC Villains Month. If you're interested and get off on this shit like I do, find these stats. They're easily around.
What's even more interesting about all this is that they also didn't have the right production numbers and this and that. And imagine how much more sales they could have had they had those 3D covers, you know, at all the shops that they wanted them, or all the titles that they got limited to sending out. Like, this was a huge deal, and in about a year's time, we're going to start seeing probably, you know, Green Goblin and any other Marvel bad guys for Villains Month. So
I still think DC should have their villains fight Marvel's heroes. And you'd have the best books ever.
If only that could happen.
Yep.
Maybe in fan fiction.
Well, speaking of Marvel wanting to fight people, that's pretty much, hey, I got an idea. Marvel, why don't you pick on a little guy? And Marvel decided to send a cease and desist notice to a guy who made a fan film called The Dead Can Be Distracted, which is based on the Rucka and Cecchetto run of the Punisher. So that kind of raises more the question of where does fan fiction become plagiarism?
Yeah, because there's so much of it around, and as long as you aren't, I thought, making money off it, you're just doing whatever, you know, with it. Fuck, we can go out and shoot a comic book movie.
Well, you know, and it starts, I mean, like, and shit, even for as far as, you know, we did those silly superhero brackets for March Madness.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, I mean, who knows? Maybe we're going to be getting a cease and desist letter here pretty soon.
All right. But really, honestly, I'm going to point the blame at, and I'm having trouble digging it up, but I'm going to point the finger at the guy who made this movie.
Okay.
Okay. Because if he would have done a shit job and put it together a little bit more sloppy, then fucking Disney wouldn't have given him two shits.
Oh, so what you're saying is he did too well and showed them up.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's... So it's his own goddamn problem.
Yeah.
If he wants to be ignored, I don't know, fucking go in post-production and, I don't know, do some shitty animation for some special effects.
Yeah. Make it look less better than what
Marvel's managed to do. Yeah, actually... Yeah, although then again, maybe Marvel should go, hey, cease and desist, but yeah. can you make something, really? Because suck.
didn't that happen, actually, didn't that happen with the Batman Predator short that was out, like 4 or 5 years ago?
I don't know.
Remember that? I forget what it's called. And listeners, please, because I'll never forget. I can't remember. It's something like Endgame or something. I think that's what it was, Batman Predator Endgame. Listeners, you know, go to Twitter or Facebook, let us know. But that was really good. It was Batman Predator Endgame. I'm almost positive that was the name. And really, you guys got to check it out. I'm sure it's still circulating out there. But the guy who made that, I was told that he got picked up by a major studio for, I don't know, costume design or something like that. So that would be my recommendation to go check out for that. But I'm sure he got he didn't. DC's like, okay, you were just promoting the line.
Yeah,
but obviously Disney doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, well,
evil mouse.
Marvel, go look at what this guy's doing because he made Punisher look good on screen. That's my opinion. All right, I think that's going to do it for news and notes. Take a little trip down the Indy Turnpike, and this week I've got Rocket Girl, number one, written by Brandon Montclair, art by Amy Reeder. And when I say art, I'm talking pencils, inks, and color. She did it all. And published by Image. I need to say first that this was a book that I backed on Kickstarter a few months ago. And the book not only hit stands on Wednesday, but it also landed in my mailbox on the same day. So I was super happy about that. What I was really happy about was to see a book that went from Kickstarter to getting picked up by Image. I thought that was huge. Yeah.
Oh, good for them.
Now, as for the story itself, it centers around a 15-year-old girl named Dayoung Johansson. And she may be 15, but she's actually a cop from the future. But the year she's from in the future is 2013. And
the now is when?
Yeah. What?
Who? Huh? Who's on first?
Yeah. Why? Now, it kind of brings me to this little point where one of the things I thought was interesting is that when the book opens, Montclair lists 1986 as the present, and he lists 2013 as the past. And I think that that'll make a little bit more sense as the story continues, but I'll try and touch on that more here a little bit later. Dayoung goes back in time, quote-unquote, to try and stop some scientists at a company called Quantum Mechanics from creating something that will result in crimes against time. And when you look at the 2013 that she's from, it's actually very futuristic. And I know, Tony, when you were reading it, you're like, wait a minute, 2013 has flying cars and this and that. And I'm like, hold on, check it out. Basically, whatever it is that these scientists are going to create will create a future that is far more advanced than ours is currently. But I don't know what that is, and I don't know why there's crimes involved. They haven't given all that information up yet. The story's a lot of fun. Montclair does a really great job of kind of giving you an idea of who Dayoung is as a character, you know, who she is as a person. There are a number of things he doesn't answer, but as far as the first issue, you know, and just first issues in general, that's to be expected, I would say. But the real star of this book, in my opinion, is Amy Reeder. Excuse me. Because her art is hands down some of the best art that I've seen this year. She's got a knack for bringing out some of the best acting from characters in a book. It actually made me wonder how much she studied not only facial expressions of people, but also like the actual postures of people while they're reacting to different situations.
More than just throwing a mirror in front of her face and going, bleh,
yeah. Bleh. Yeah, because I mean, it's...
Smile!
And it's just gorgeous. But you put all that in there with like really creative and unique layouts. I mean, her lines are fucking perfect. Her colors, honestly, I mean, they take this book to a whole new level. So
yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, this again is a book that, fantastic story, but you could just sit and look at it.
And see, I don't really like stories about young teenage angst and all that stuff. And for a 15-year-old girl, I was like thinking, okay, this is going to be one of those teen rom-coms or something. No, it's pretty awesome.
She's young, but she's like, you know.
And actually, now thinking about it, 15-year-old fucking cop, what do they do in the future?
Yeah. Like,
Well, she's, that's crazy.
Yeah, she's part of the New York teen police. You know, and yeah, it's awesome. But she's got a rocket pack, and that's the whole reason that she joined, because she wanted to be able to fly. And, you know, there are some minor things with the book that I'm like, okay, you know, maybe that would have been, like, the fact that the cops are very, the 1986 cops are very easy to accept the fact that she's a cop from the future. That's probably my only real complaint, if I had one. But it worked. You know, it wasn't enough to, like, make me go, bah! You know, like, it
what, make you go what? Bah!
Are you vomiting right now?
No, I'm doing a goat thing, I guess. I don't know.
I got this tin can. You want to eat that?
I'll chew on that here a little bit later. But you know, the thing is that if you guys didn't pick this book up, you're missing out. I'm giving Rocket Girl two massive mugs up. Go buy it. I wouldn't be surprised to see this be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, hit out of 2013. So it's fantastic. And thank you to the creators for sending out the comic from the Kickstarter so perfectly preserved that there was not a crease, crinkle, or anything in it, because I'm a fanatic when it comes to that. And some of the bonuses for the stretch goals in there were pretty cool. So
dude, that what would you call it? A little postcard-ish type thing?
Yeah, the little
fucking
print.
Beautiful.
Yeah, the front and back print of Rocket Girl standing in Times Square. The image that you see on the front is, you know, her with the buildings in the back. When you flip it around, it's the picture from directly behind her. Yeah,
it's, of like the future too. Like, just it's the split world. It's, I don't know. It just, it's that makes me pissed that I missed, you know,
yeah,
getting that. I wish like there was some way that I would know about backing some of this shit.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, Tony.
Because is it funny or is it coincidence or is it
or is it just good fucking segues? Because we got a new segment this week for you guys that we're calling Barbacks, where we're gonna talk about some Kickstarter projects or other projects that are out there that
we think you should go back.
Yeah, and kick.
Yeah, and
kick back. Barback them.
Yeah, or yeah, barring them.
Yeah. But God, I need more beer. But this week we're gonna be talking about the tales of Mr. Ree, written by our good friend Dirk Manning, which you guys heard a brief smidge about Mr. Ree when we interviewed Seth DeMoose here a while back.
That's MR period.
R-H-E-E. Yes.
Yeah, because honestly, I didn't really put the two and two together until you just said it. Because when you forwarded it to me, I'm just like, oh, I got this book, Mr. Ree.
Yeah,
but it's kind of like when I saw Galactus, the Swarm, how it's spelled out. I didn't really
put two and two together and spelled together. Galactus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just didn't connect the dots.
But. Yeah. So if you go up and look Tales of Mr. period, R-H-E-E, on Kickstarter, you'll find it on there. And by the time this comes out, there's going to be 22 days left. And they've got a $13,000 goal. They're, you know, roughly at not quite to the 5,000 mark as of the time of recording here. But this is one that I would suggest going out there and checking out.
Some of the goodies?
The goodies, you know, they've got the $5 where, you know, they just thank you. Like, you don't actually get anything, but, you know, there are people that will just give you $5 because that's what they can give on there. But for $10, you'll get the digital version of the graphic novel. As you get into it, they've got some cool add-ons where, like, if you're buying, say, the digital and you want to add on an 11x17 print, you can add on that. If you want to add on I think they've got a T-shirt in here that you can do. But the paperback, where I think where it really started to come into play was at the $25 mark, where you get the hardcover, because that's what they're doing, is this hardcover. The kicker with this Kickstarter, if you will, the only place you'll ever get a hardcover version of this book is if you back it on Kickstarter. That's it. That's the only place. So, but Riley Rossmo, who I absolutely love his art, you know, he did Bedlam here a while back. He also did the Dia de los Muertos books that were coming out, and a million other things that he's well known for, but those are the two most recent that I can think of. he's doing the cover for the hardcover book on there. You get up to $25, and then you're getting into the book plates or the $40 and $50. They've got things you can name a book somebody in there, which actually I think those are all gone. You know,
what's the biggest prize or what's the best prize?
Well, the biggest one, and let me see if it's still here. It is. It's one of one. It is the Dirk Manning Mega Pack. Kevin, did you look at this one?
Mm-mm. No, I did. I didn't.
Basically, you get one of everything that Dirk's ever done.
That's a hell of a pack.
Yeah. One of everything. You know, and I'm assuming that
I'm assuming that's got to go for like thousands, if not millions of dollars.
Well, it's actually not the biggest, but Dirk being Dirk, it is $666. but yeah.
And Dirk's then, a dork.
Dirk is a dork. But we love him. There is one that where you can do like a store signing. That's like a little bit more, but you also get like a, I don't know how many books that you get with this, but Dirk and Josh Blaylock, Josh Blaylock is the guy that drew this. They'll come out and do a store signing. But go check this out, guys. You know, we had a chance to look at the first chapter of the 13 chapters in here. It's a really interesting story, really unique. Blaylock did a really nice job with art, and we've been happy with everything we've ever read from Dirk. So please go check that out on Kickstarter. And that's it for our first edition of Barbacks.
Yeah. Dirk is once again a first for us again.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of Barbacks, Tony, I'm tasty. You got some booze in a book? I'm tasty. I'm thirsty. What the fuck?
You're tasty.
I'm drunky.
You're delicious, man.
I'm tasty. That's going to be my new thing.
yes, I have an excellent book that I picked up this week, Forever Evil, Arkham War. Once again, another title from DC that's going with this Forever Evil, which is amazing. I don't want this to ever end because these villains are kind of better than the superheroes because they don't have to live by that higher code. There's a lot of killing. There's a lot of chaos. This whole book is pitting all of Batman's bad guys pretty much versus Bane. Bane wants to control this city. Peter Tomasi, the writer, doing an awesome job. To pair with this book, it's kind of a drink that we've tried before and came up with, which we call the Insane Green Fairy. What you do is you take Black Mamba Venom, which is the energy drink, kind of like a Red Bull clone, and get it, because Bane uses Venom as his drug, and drop a shot of absinthe with a small bit of blue...
Curacao.
Yep. To give it just that green fairiness. You drink this, you're going to go insane all night long. It's a perfect shot for a perfect book.
And you're going to think that you're really strong and can break Batman in half.
Yeah. Just don't try to.
Well, I'm just going to
I mean, unless you see Batman, and then I guess you can try. But
if you
good
drink,
luck.
If you drink enough the Green Fairy, you'll see a lot of things. All right. I think that does it outside of Last Call. Did you guys have any extra books this week that you needed to bring up?
FPB. Once again, amazing. Amazing.
Is that like PBR?
It's like PB&J.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Federal Bureau of Physics for those not in the know.
A.K.A. Was Collider.
Yeah. Uncanny X-Force number 12. Death Sentence number 1 from Titan Comics, which I have to say, their marketing on this to us as press people.
If we got to throw that online, man, that is awesome.
Yeah. Actually, I'll give you this, and Kevin, you can scan it in and throw it up there. But it's about a... it's about a sexually transmitted disease, more or less, the G-plus virus. And they sent out a really, really cool marketing scheme with a copy of this book to us. Great book, though. We really should check it out. Deathmatch is still kicking along pretty good. X from Dark Horse. Really kind of getting a lot deeper and darker. And I'm not quite sure where this book is going, but I'm still hooked. Battle of the Atom, that it was in just the regular X-Men title this week. Tony, did you read that one?
Nope, not yet.
It's good. And huge shout-out Journey, number 5 of 5, J-I-R-N-I, from Aspen Comics. Writer J.T. Krull and artist Paolo Pantalena.
I really like that cover.
This, anything that Pantalena does is just insane. I mean, the detail work that he puts into this is gorgeous. But for as sad as I was that this was a 5 of 5 and that the story's ending, flip the page. Volume 2 is coming out! Like, fuck yeah!
Dude, don't stop believing.
Yeah. Wow.
My only one that I have, I'm behind this week, but the only one I got is Green Lantern Corps 24, the continuing story of Darkest Night, or Lights Out.
Lights Out.
I'm going back in time now.
Gotta go back in time.
My last couple other ones, Astro City Man. I am just so glad I randomly picked up that book. I just have loved it.
So is this Astro City 5, like the series 5 now?
Yeah, it's on its fifth one.
Yeah, because it says it on the cover, right?
Yep. Avengers AI is surprisingly good for, once again, another Avengers title with AI. And Thor. Oh, and have to mention Infinity number 4. That's just, it's telling how the story is, man. It's fucking blowing up. Love it.
Boom.
Drop the mic.
Blowing it up. All right, that does it for me. I need more beer.
I do too. You don't want something to eat? Not tasty?
I am tasty. I don't need to eat anything more.
Yeah. That does it for me too, so
I'm done.
All right, guys, keep reading your comics. We'll be back to talk to you about them next tasty week.